Okay, good morning. My name's Michael Riley. I train teachers at Bath Spa University, and I'm the advisor for history with Somerset LEA. Making history matter for young people. I'm going to focus the next 20 minutes on 11 to 14-year-olds, and I'm going to put up a piece of text now. I'd like you to put your hand up if you know where this text comes from. As soon as it dawns on you, it may not, so don't worry, but if it does dawn on you where this text comes from, just put up your hand. One person, hang on, let's see how many hands we get up. Jerome knows. Okay, would anyone other than Jerome like to suggest? Mary, would you like to suggest? It is. From the proposed new national curriculum at Key Stage 3 that was launched last week at the British Library across the road. I think it's a pretty good starting point for planning history for 11 to 14 years. It's not set in stone yet. Over the next few months we can all have our say on this on the QCA website. It's on their website now. I hasten to add that this is just the first paragraph of the important statement for history in the Key Stage 3 curriculum. There's a new dimension here though, and a word included for the first time in the important statement for the national curriculum that I think is really important, and it's one that's cropped up a lot already at this conference yesterday and this morning, and that word is identity. The statement reads that history helps pupils to develop their own identity to an understanding of history at personal, local, national and international levels. And I want to share three examples, really, of the way in which history can do that for 11 to 14-year-olds at the local level, at the national level and at the international level. I'm feeling homesick. I've been in London for 2 days and this is my patch of England. And this is a comprehensive school where the school, it's that white blob on the right, by the way, the school, that my two oldest children go to. It's Stanchester School in South Somerset. A typical school in its locality. And what a fantastic locality it is for teaching history. I took this photograph from Ham Hill, which is the largest Iron Age hill fort in Europe. And Stanchester School itself, at the bottom of the school playing fields, is a Roman villa site. It was named Stanchester, is the name of the Roman villa. And it was dug, I think, about 10 years ago. And the archaeologists left the school with an amazing collection of artifacts. So every year, 7 pupil gets to pick up a pair of Roman tweezers. The Roman tweezers that were found at the bottom of that school playing ground. It's just off the Foss Way, and this is a really rich part of England for the discovery of new Roman villa sites. But beyond that, we have, just in the middle of the picture there, we have East Stoke Church, which has some Saxon features, some Norman features, some later medieval features. This field at the bottom there, medieval strip lynchets. The hill on the right was where Robert de Mortain, William the Conqueror's half-brother, built a Norman Motton Bailey castle. And in the village next to it, Montacute, is one of the finest Elizabethan houses in England. In the 19th century, this landscape became quite industrialised. It was a centre for the gloving trade, and women and children ruined their eyesight by making gloves at home, while the men worked in the quarry at Ham Hill. Now, what richness there is here for planning a history curriculum. And we ignore this, really, at our peril. The school make good use of it in terms of doing what we suggested might be terribly helpful yesterday in terms of a quick thematic study. We talked of one of the problems that children have in developing framework knowledge. Well, here's a school that does this at the beginning of year 7 very quickly by getting kids out into this landscape and looking at how the landscape, this shared landscape, this shared place, has changed over 2,000 years. Every school has history on its doorstep. and we need to make maximum use of this. Perhaps not as rich as this through over 2,000 years, but every school has it somewhere. Just down the road from Montague, where I live, is the small town of Chard. And this is an interesting photograph. It was taken in 1908. And this is St Mary's Church in Chard. And the comprehensive school in Chard, Holyrood School, which is the only school, it's the only secondary that serves this community, most of the children who attend that school walk past this church every day on their way to school. The difference between that scene in 1908 and now, well, two differences, I think. There wouldn't be snow. We didn't even get snow last week on the Holyrood Comprehensive. Huge disappointment in Somerset among all the children. But also, in front of the church is a war memorial. This photograph was used by the head of history, Stuart Roper, at Holyrood School, to start an investigation that attempts to develop a sense of local identity, to connect the children in the school with people in their town. Because Stuart tells us the story of the three Weber boys who lived in that house on the right-hand side, just near the pump, all of whom lost their lives in the First World War. Stuart did just a couple of days' research in the local studies library in Taunton and in the local archive, and collected resources that illuminated the way in which people in the town had lost their lives during the First World War, and it became the basis for an investigation into people's lives in the town at that time. So he created a resource bank, which he put on the school intranet. And interestingly, he began with the 1901 census to show the men when they were much younger. So children began, through their research using the census data and the names they had of men from the Commonwealth War Graves site who'd lost their lives in the First World War, to investigate these lives in some detail and to see these young men when they were 3 years old, when they were 4 years old, to see them in the context of their families in the town. And this is Jess's work. Every other lesson, by the way, in this sequence of lessons with year nine, these are 14-year-olds on the Great War, involves them going out into the town, walking from the school and exploring different parts of the town, because those particular houses they have materials for in terms of the young man who died. And this is Jess's, one of Jess's PowerPoint slides on the two of the Weber brothers, Edward Weber, who died just 7 days before the war ended. I think she writes quite movingly about him. Clearly, here's a 14-year-old girl connected, developing her sense of local identity, the importance of place. And the children not only kind of produced all range of things, I mean PowerPoints, but also, I think the most interesting thing they did is to take the school governors around their town, all of whom, or most of whom, were from Chard itself. But none of the governors knew this local history of the young men who died. And so the Year 9 children took the governors around the town, and you could see the kids actually bursting with pride, really, telling them these stories. As I say, the Weber brothers were just one area. They go to visit the site of the graves. This is a tour of the town that, again, is Jess Simpson's work. And you can see what she's done. She's connected these different locations and has researched the lives and deaths of the men who are connected to these places. Well, I think it's an inspirational piece of local history research that the whole of Year 9 do. An excellent example of young people inquiring, researching, communicating, connecting with the lives of people in their own community in the past, and actually caring about these people as individuals. We need more of it. diversity, I think, is something that we need really to celebrate in our schools with children. Let's move on to look at national history, at British history. Thomas Coriot. Anyone know what Coriot was famous for? What would year 8 say he was famous for, based on this? Absolutely, riding elephants, yeah? He also brought the fork back to England, because he was the son of a Somerset vicar, and a courtier at the court of James I, and went on the first grand tour and brought the fork back to England. Wrote about it, but his book didn't sell terribly well, so he decided that he would do something even more remarkable, and that was to walk all the way from Somerset to northern India in 1612, which he did. And he wrote to his mates back home, at regular intervals actually, for the English wits and the good of this kingdom, to all his inferior countrymen, because clearly, you know, they'd just stayed at home. He walked all the way to northern India and visited the court of the Mughal emperor, where he was given an audience with Jahangir and a bit of money, and was just thought of as some kind of weird eccentric. He preached Christianity from a minaret in Agra in 1613 and survived, which tells us a lot about the Mughal empire at that time, I think. It's a hidden history and can tell us so much about the relationship between English people and Indians at that time. We were then perceived, I think, as relatively harmless. And we've already had an example this morning of how that was to change some years later. Here are some other hidden histories. I just want to chat with the person next to you to see if you recognise any of these hidden histories. Just 1 minute, chat the person next to you, see if you recognise any. Okay, just stop there. Any offers? Yes. Absolutely splendid. Thank you for that, John. Absolutely. We're getting there. It's Lord Liverpool, actually, who had an Indian granny. And the scene down here, you're right, actually, is the death of one Miss Williams, who was a 19th century Memsahib in India. These are all hidden histories that are part of all our history. Yeah, well done. I suppose you get all this. Jamie Byron, who's a colleague of mine, who I write school materials with and textbooks with, created an inquiry for a book we wrote on British Empire around these hidden histories, asking children to think about what these hidden histories, these small stories, the lives of these individual people mean in terms of the bigger picture, the relationship between British people and Indians over time. This is what children have to do. And at the end of the inquiry, they use the summaries they produce of these individual lives to create a display that tells us about the bigger picture of the relationship between Indians and British people over time. And this is the kind of thing that Vincent might produce. It shows a move from very good, friendly, trusting relationships, the kind of relationship brilliantly written about by William Dalrymple in White Moogle, to very bad, unfriendly, violent, even people spitting on headteacher's shoes, that kind of behaviour. And kind of changing slightly with Dada by Nairoji. I think this is an immensely powerful inquiry that children can engage in Year 8. Powerful because it addresses a whole range of second-order concepts in terms of developing understanding of change through time, of diversity, of significance, of the relationship between the general and the particular in history. And powerful too in the sense that it helps children to develop a sense of their inclusive and diverse British history. I think we need to teach a British history that is more diverse, that is more inclusive, that has many different aspects, and that fundamentally integrates more successfully than we have done in the past Asian history and African Caribbean history into our national history. Kay Trail has written brilliantly in her PhD thesis on this through her work interviewing young African Caribbean students in this country and their mums, many of whom reported a sense of alienation in sitting in their history lessons in this country. Finally, I want to move on to sense of global identity that I think is more difficult to achieve in our curriculum, but can be done. Baghdad, in 2003. How many of our pupils know the significance of Baghdad in world history? How many of our pupils know, and we spoke earlier of the mobile phone as a good starting point for learning, but how many of our pupils know that were it not for what happened in Baghdad 1,000 years ago, they wouldn't have their mobile phones? And what we're talking about here fundamentally is knowledge transmission. Here's a wonderful picture of Muslim scholars and their teacher in what looks like an amazingly well-stocked library in Abbasid Baghdad in the 9th century. And this is a question I put together, an inquiry I put together for a forthcoming book that I'm writing with Daniel Byron Christian Council on Islamic history for Key Stage 3. What's so special about Abbasid Baghdad? What children do is research various aspects of the city. They look at the morphology of the city, its buildings, what those buildings were used for, what they mean, the significance of them. They look at the work of the scholars in the House of Wisdom. They find out about the ideas that the Baghdad scholars collected from ancient India, from Persia, from ancient Greece, and the way in which those ideas were developed by the Muslim scholars. I've tried this out recently with a group of 13-year-olds in Somerset, and they were greatly taken by the ideas of the philosopher Al-Ghazali, who thought deeply about the education of young people and said that the most important thing was that young people should not boast about their parents' wealth. I overhear in schools children boasting about their parents' wealth all the time. And we couldn't stop the discussion really about this. You know, it started with history and led on to a discussion of citizenship, really. Yeah, one of the things that the children found most interesting was actually the medicine in Abbasid Baghdad. Not only the medical knowledge, but also the development of hospitals. And it was really interesting because we'd read the way in which in Muslim medicine there was a recognition in the 10th century of the healing power of gardens and of water. And it was interesting that one of the girls, this is in a school in Taunton, one of the girls said that she'd heard on BBC Points West that several hundred pounds were to be spent on developing the gardens in Taunton Hospital because it was recognised that gardens, greenery, had the power to help people heal more quickly. And she said, but if they knew that in Baghdad 1,000 years ago, why have we only just discovered it now in Taunton? It's very interesting. Enyad had a kind of moment of realization, really, that Sophie had also had in Sophie's world. Amy had made a connection between herself and the people of Abbasid Baghdad, and in that sense was developing her global identity. Thank you.